When Dit, when you were sharing your story, I thought of an opposite story, which also illustrates that pride comes before a fall. When I was a young fella, I was a navigator on a Hercules, and I'd done the strategic trash hauling stuff, and I then had progressed to the tactical side of thing, which is, you know, flying up through the valleys and dropping air loads and doing all that gee whiz stuff. And it was my final check ride. And so we're ripping through the valleys of New South Wales, and I'm an arrogant young man saying, this is a piece of cake, this stuff, you know. Don't know why you blokes make such a big fuss about it. And there used to be a thing called the Chart Amendment Document, which would show you if there'd been changes to the maps that we used to use, and I was too lazy to look at that. And I said to the pilot, now I want you just to go around this bluff here and go down the valley that'll be just on your right. And of course, since the map was made, they dammed the river for the Dell Power Station in New South Wales. So we went round this bluff and there's this enormous lake in front of me that wasn't on the map. And from that day on, that particular piece of geography was known as Rolls's Bluff in the squadron. So that's why I love the scriptures, no amendments, you know what I mean? I digress. Part 22 of our verse-by-verse series on the book of Revelation. Last time I spoke, I said we'd do chapter 8, verses 1 to 11. I lied. In fact, I want to do a bit of a digression and go back to four verses in the book of Daniel. What happened was I think I got up to about verse 7, working through the week on it, and then when I went to open it up again, it was completely corrupted. The file was, I've never seen it happen ever before. It was just garbage. And I thought, oh, well, I can remember most of it. I'll start again. So I started again. I thought, you know, I probably should do review a few verses in Daniel while I'm at it. And the more I looked at it, I thought, no, I probably need to go right back to those and focus on those verses from Daniel before we go back. So I think it all worked out well in the end. Now, last Sunday week, we looked at possible reasons why the tribe of Dan might have been omitted from the list of 144,000 Jewish people from the various tribes to be sealed by God. And we said there's two credible theories why. One was that Dan was being punished for a history of tribal idolatry. And the other credible theory was that, as the name implies, and as Jacob prophesied over him, Dan shall judge his people. The word "dan" means judge. So perhaps Dan is being reserved for some judgmental purpose. Don't know. Neither of them were particularly conclusive, so take your pick. We also saw a great multitude appear in heaven, and we said, who are they? And the heavenly elder that spoke with John said that they were those coming out of the great tribulation. And so, in my opinion, these are Christian martyrs. A whole bunch of Christians will be martyred by the final evil empire. We have no idea what that empire will be, but we can take a good guess. And it's probably the group that says, first we'll kill the Saturday people, then we'll kill the Sunday people. So we then looked at a logical sequence of events based on that premise. We saw that in chapter 6, verses 1 to 8, the Lord opens the first four seals, which released Bion, Wadja, Wadwick and Whoopit, the four horsemen. And the primary targets were the Jews at that point. Then in verse 9, he opened the fifth seal and the persecution shifts to Christians at that point. Verse 10, the martyrs asked the Lord, when are you going to avenge our deaths? And verse 11, God says, wait for some more martyrs. And then there was a little bit of a digression while those Jews were sealed for whatever purpose that may be. Then back in chapter 7, verse 9, to verses 14, multitudes of Christians are martyred. So I think it's probably a logical flow, and I think it fits. Point is, of course, at the end of chapter 7, we all live happily ever after. So we ask the question, what do we need another 14 chapters of the book of Revelation for? And also, what's the seventh seal about? We've still got one seal on the scroll to go. So onwards and upwards, but before we go any further, as I said, we'll go back a few years to Daniel chapter 9 on a rabbit trail. The thing about churches is people come and people go, don't they? And One of the things I routinely forget is that what's old hat to many of us may not be to people who haven't been with us for a number of years. And so, given that this section of Revelation we're looking at describes the events prior to the return of Christ, we've bandied the terms the Great Tribulation and the time of Jacob's trouble around, but there may be some with us, not just here this morning, but out there in internet land who catch up with these things on the internet, who may not be familiar with those terms. Where do we get them from? The first one is quite simple. In Matthew 24:21, speaking of the end of the age, Jesus said, "For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been, since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be." The second term comes from the book of Jeremiah, chapter 30, verse 7. "Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is the time of Jacob's trouble." Well, how can that be? When Jeremiah gave these words, Jacob had been dead for over 1,000 years. Well, of course, Jacob is a corporate solidarity, isn't he? Jacob represents those who are in Jacob, all his descendants, the 12 tribes of Israel, and in the specific context of Jeremiah 30, the northern and southern kingdoms of Israel and Judah. Israel, of course, had already been discombobulated by the Assyrians and didn't exist at that point. So this is a prophetic, a prophecy given for the descendants of Jacob, which would be all the Jews, and probably including any Gentiles who had made a proselyte conversion to Judaism, perhaps. So what's Jacob's trouble for? But he shall be saved out of it. So this is after God has finished with the Gentiles, Romans 11:25-26. Blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness, until the appropriate number of Gentiles has come in, whatever that may be, only God knows. And so all Israel shall be saved. So how long will this time of Jacob's trouble, the great tribulation, go for? And when will it begin? Excuse me. And so that's why we need to go back in time to our Daniel series. Daniel chapter 9 contains a section called the prophecy of weeks. It's actually a misnomer. Daniel 9:24, 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city. No, they're not. It says shavuim shavim, which means literally sevens, there'll be 70. Shavuim is not the word for weeks in Hebrew. You know the word, the Hebrew word for weeks. Yes, you do. You really do. Shavuot. Or as we would say in the Christian world, Pentecost. Shavuot was when, according to tradition, the law was given at Mount Sinai. According to the New Testament, it's when the Spirit was poured out on the first disciples. But remember these festivals. They are all a prophetic picture of God's calendar for all mankind. And what happened at Pentecost in the agricultural calendar? The harvest changed from purely barley and wheat to anything you like. You could harvest pomegranates and nuts and fruits and bananas, whatever you wanted. And it's a prophetic picture of the long hot summer when the Gentiles, the fullness of the Gentiles, is coming into salvation before the time of Jacob's trouble at the end, which is prophetically pictured by Yom Teruah, the festival of trumpets. So, 77s are determined, in other words, 490-somethings. Now, most commentators say these somethings are years, 490 years, and it tends to fit with other scriptures. So, most say 490 years are determined for your people and your holy city. So the Jewish people, because speaking to Daniel, and Jerusalem have 490 years. Is there any significance in 490? Well, we could try a little gematria. 490 is 7 times 7 times 10 times 10. 7, as you know, is a number of perfection in the sense of completion. God created the world in 7 days, a perfect place. On the last day he rested. Scripture says the day to the Lord is as 1,000 years. And this is a prophetic picture of the 7,000 years of human history. 6,000 years of trouble and strife and then a day of rest. And if you take the genealogies in Genesis literally, and I'm not sure if they're meant to be, but if you do, and that's the important point, we're getting very, very close to the end of this age. Very close. And a number squared in gematria is that number on steroids, right? So 7 squared is very perfect, very complete. 10 is the number of human responsibility. We've seen that before. So this looks to be perhaps 490 years to complete the era of Israel's covenantal responsibility. Let's see if that fits with what follows in the rest of the passage. It's, what are these 490 years for? To finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity. It's to completely deal with sin, Israel's sin. What kind of sins? Well, there's sins, chatat, it's plural there, chatot. So this would be the sins of people, and sin in the Old Testament, using this word, means accidental breaches of covenant. Non-intentional. Then we have iniquity, avon, deliberate breach of covenant with malice aforethought. This is singular. This is not individual people. This is Israel's iniquity as a nation, as a people. And finally, we have the worst, pesha, transgression. Willful, defiant breach of God's holy commandments, staring him in the eye and saying, what are you going to do about it? So these 490 years are going to deal completely with the sin of Israel. What else? To bring in everlasting righteousness. Has that happened yet? Well, I've heard it said that that happened at the cross. But remember to whom this prophecy is directed, Daniel, your people and your holy city, Jerusalem. Is there everlasting righteousness in Jerusalem right now? I don't think so. See, Daniel's people were permitted to go back to Judah, Israel had gone, back to Judah when Persia conquered the Babylonians, 538 BC. But they were kicked out again, weren't they, in the 2nd century AD by the Roman Emperor Hadrian. And indeed, they didn't even own Jerusalem until 1967, and even now they don't control every square inch of that city. So this is still future. Anything else? To seal up vision and prophecy. Well, what does that mean? Well, just as a scroll or an envelope can be sealed, and indeed we've seen the 7 seals on the scroll in the prophetic vision so far, the seal tells us that the prophecy and the vision is not fully revealed, will not be fully disclosed, and won't be fully understood until the time, until it's needed, until the end. And we find this elsewhere in Daniel chapter 12, verse 9. And he, the angel Gabriel, said to Daniel, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. You won't get any more explanation until you need it. And that's why when we speculate on what these prophetic scriptures mean, if it isn't close to the end, we'll get it wrong, as everyone else has for the last 2,000 years, you know. But if we're getting close to the end, God will reveal what these things are showing us. And who knows? Maybe we're getting close to the end. I think we are. Righto, what else? And to anoint the most holy. Well, what's this? Yeah, I remember hearing a sermon once where the guy was saying, this is Christ. You know, he was the anointed one and this prophecy was about him being anointed. No. Kodesh Kodeshim means the Holy of Holies, the innermost part of the temple. Some say this happened in 164 BC when this fellow, the evil Antiochus IV, major prophetic picture of the Antichrist, was defeated by the Maccabees and they cleansed the temple again following his defilement of it. So where's the everlasting righteousness in Jerusalem? Didn't happen, did it? Remember, biblical prophecy isn't prophecy and fulfillment. Biblical prophecy is cyclical patterns. History repeats itself. And if all the details of a prophecy are not fulfilled, well, there's still at least one more cycle to go. God does this to show us that he's in control of the future. How can I believe that what he says here is going to happen? Well, it's already happened 4 times. Get it? So when did or when does this 490 years start? The prophecy continues. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince. Well, now we're getting somewhere. Messiah will come after the command to rebuild Jerusalem. How long after? Well, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall, even in troublesome times. That word street, rehov, means street, but it can mean the square, an open sort of space. So there's 7 weeks and 62 weeks. No, there isn't. There's seven sevens and 62 sevens. So 7 plus 62 is 69 out of our 70 sevens. So that's 483 years. We're still 7 years short, aren't we? Well, we'll get back to that. We'll come back to that a little later. But that's a strange way to put it when you think about it, isn't it? Why say 7 sevens and 62 sevens? Why not just say there shall be 69 sevens? Gematria. 7 times 7 plus 62 times 7 is 7 times 7 times 2 times 31. Yeah? We know what 7 is. Perfection, completion. 2 is the number of witness. And 31, what's that? Well, I can only think of one noun that has a numerical value of 31, and that's El, God. I can think of a, what would you call it, adjective? No. Anyway, on, upon. What's that? Is that an adjective? No. Whatever it is. Anyway. What is it? Preposition. Preposition. Thank you. Thank you. I haven't been... No, I won't go there. You can reverse those letters and get lo, which means no, but the only noun I can think of is God. So 483 is the perfect witness to God. And after 483 years, Messiah comes. And if you're wondering, you could say 69 times 7 is 3 times 23 times 7. If the Spirit had inspired Daniel to write it that way, 7 is perfection completion, 3 is stability, and 23 is nothing really. So I dare say that's why it was written in stages. And maybe something happened after 49 years exactly in history that we're not, or I'm not aware of. So, when was this command to rebuild the city of Jerusalem given? Well, this chappy gave the decree, Artaxerxes, the first king of Persia. Do you remember him? His other name is Xerxes. Ahasuerus? Ahasuerus? Yeah, some people are nodding. Remember his missus? Esther, Hadassah. And that's exactly what she looked like. That's a photo. complete with makeup and everything and whitened teeth. Nah. But he gave the command to rebuild Jerusalem in 457 BC. Add 483 to that, there's no year zero. You get 27 AD, which is probably about the time our Lord began his public ministry. And you know, it makes sense. I sort of hadn't thought about it till I did this, but if you haven't read the book of Esther, I know we studied it as a book, but if you haven't read it for a while, or people out there in internet land, the evil Haman organised genocide against the Jewish people, just like every man and his dog does, you know. And then Esther came out of the cupboard and said to hubby, the king, by the way, I'm Jewish. So he said, all right, we'll work around that. And of course, Haman and his 10 sons were executed, and the Jewish people were saved. So it makes sense that about that time that Esther would have said or influenced her husband to say, won't you let him build the city as well? Perhaps at Mordecai's request? It all makes sense, doesn't it? I'd never thought about it till during the week. Anyway, what else does the Daniel text prophesy? And after the 62 weeks, that is after 7 and 62, after 69, what happens? Messiah shall be cut off. Well, that's exactly what happened, wasn't it? You know, there isn't another religious book in the world that predicts the future, certainly not with any accuracy. Did you know there's 2,500 prophecies in the Bible? 2,000 have been fulfilled already to the letter. God wrote this book. That's why it has no amendments. do I like it? Anyway, why did he die? Not for himself. True, isn't it? True again. What else does the Daniel text prophesy? Ooh, I think I went too fast. And this thing's got no reverse, but that the people who would come would destroy the city and the sanctuary, right? Who destroyed the city and the sanctuary? Oh, the Romans did, right? Under General Titus. So there you have it. Biblical prophecy isn't just prophecy and fulfillment, it's cyclical. Therefore, the Antichrist will be a European from the revived Roman Empire, just like Nicolae Carpathia, as all the books and movies say. There's just one problem with that. Who were Titus's people? The people who will destroy the city and the sanctuary. Well, according to Publius Cornelius Tacitus, the first century Roman historian, Titus had 5,000 Roman officers at his disposal, and they commanded half a dozen foreign legions. And the legions were comprised of Egyptians, Syrians, and Turks. And if this fellow, Josephus, the first century Jewish historian, is to be believed, he said that the Roman officers commanded them not to destroy the temple. But such was the hatred of the Egyptians, the Syrians, and Turks that they disobeyed the orders and trashed the temple anyway. Some things never change, do they? Back to the story. He shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. The end of it shall be with a flood, probably figuratively speaking, a cataclysm. Until the end of the war, desolations are determined. So that still leaves our 7 years, doesn't it? It's probable that God has deferred the last 7 years till the end of this age. What's the intervening period for? Well, we said a minute ago, for you and me, for the fullness of the Gentiles. And when the appropriate number of Gentiles that only God knows have been saved, he will then bring about the final 7 years out of which Israel will be saved. And those last 7 years will be the Great Tribulation or the time of Jacob's trouble. Now, I should point out that some folks say things don't get really bad till the last half of the 7 years. So, no, that's not the Great Tribulation. The Great Tribulation is the last 3.5 years, whatever. What will happen in the last 7 years? Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. Well, there's your last 7 years, for 1 7, that is what it says. But who's he? God makes covenants. People make covenants. If you're married, you've made a covenant. But notice that the translators, in their wisdom, have not given the H a capital H, given he a capital H. So they don't think it's God. Some say, those who say God has finished with Israel in AD 70, they disagree. They say this is Jesus because he confirmed the new covenant. And the text continues, in the middle of the seven, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering. So say 3.5 years into it, into his ministry roughly, he died to put an end to sacrifice and suffering. So it's Jesus. There's two problems with that. Here's the first one. Ezekiel's vision of the temple in the age to come contains sacrifices. Ezekiel 40 verse 39, in the vestibule of the gateway were two tables on this side and two tables on that side, on which to slay the burnt offering, the sin offering, and the trespass offering. Here's another one, 45:15, and one lamb shall be given from a flock of 200 from the rich pastures of Israel. These shall be for grain offerings, burnt offerings, and peace offerings to make atonement for them, says the Lord God. Now, those who say those last 9 chapters of Ezekiel, which go into great detail about the temple and the practices within, are not future, say, I'm guilty of circular reasoning. You say, there's sacrifices in the temple to come, but you're assuming there's a temple to come. And I say, well, the opposite circular reasoning. You're saying there's no sacrifices to come, therefore the temple can't be to come. They say it's a perfect ideal temple that was never built. So that God gave Israel the vision of what they might have had in 9 chapters of Holy Scripture that wasn't necessary. But, you know, not just that. There's another problem with it too. He shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 7. Was the new covenant only intended for 7 years? And besides which, he initiated it in his blood, didn't he? He didn't confirm it for 7 years. So, you know. Most commentators say that he is the Antichrist, and I think they're right. It fits with what follows. And on the wing of abominations shall be one who makes desolate, even unto the consummation, which is determined, is poured out on the desolate. Got it? Clear as mud, isn't it? I think this is one of the most difficult texts in the Bible. And this is the tricky bit. On the wing of abominations, what is that all about? So let's skip that for now and go on to the rest of it. Shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation, which is determined, is poured out on the desolate. That last word should be translated desolator, the desolator. And I spent hours on this, trying to make sense of it. And I was going to show you the process I went through, but it only bore you to tears. So just take my word for it. And permit me to paraphrase. There shall be one who brings total ruin until the time when the one that utterly ruins suffers total ruin himself. Does that make sense? So, what, in other words, what goes around comes around, or is Neil from the Young Ones, who's sadly copyrighted, and I can't show you his picture anymore. You have to pretend that this hippie is Neil. He would say, oh no, bad karma, man. Right? He'll get his comeuppance. Now to the hard part, the wing of abominations. What is that? It's actually a reasonable translation. The wing of abominations, chanaf shikutzim, means the wing or extremity of that which is abhorrent. Any guesses? Beats me. You'll see a bit of this girl because her photos are not copyrighted and she does these great facial expressions. So I propose to use her whenever I need someone to give an expression. Then I had a brainwave. I thought, what saith the Septuagint? The Greek translation of the Old Testament made in the 3rd century BC. Well, I'll tell you. This is what it looks like in the Greek. And here's the bit that says, on a wing of abominations. It's just one word. One word in Greek. Hieron means the temple, the sanctuary, the holy place. Hieron means the entire temple complex, by the way. Temple and environs. The Holy of Holies in Greek is usually naos, which literally means shrine, and that's the central place. But does that make sense? An abomination on the temple environs that causes ruin and desolation. Now, we can't say the Septuagint is right and the Hebrew text is wrong, but copies of the Septuagint predate by centuries the earliest Hebrew manuscript we have. And whatever the Hebrew said in the 3rd century BC, and we don't know, 70 Jewish scholars translated it to say temple. So, in summary, the final 7 years of this age will begin with the seal judgments. The purpose of those last years is to bring salvation to Israel. Watch for another Middle East treaty, peace treaty, to be broken. And the abomination of desolation has been in place for over 1,300 years already. And that is why we're studying this, because these are the things which must soon take place. But what about this 7th final scroll seal on the scroll? Well, that's what we'll look at next time. He's a scary looking dude, isn't he? Can you imagine being in a pub with him? Would you knock his beer over? Ooh, he's too scary. Might hurt me. Might eat me. Righto. What can we take away today? The Great Tribulation, Jacob's trouble, refers to the final 7 years of this age. The delay has been to allow Gentile salvation in Israel's Messiah. We won't know when it starts. Perhaps it already has. Perhaps it started October 7th, 2023. Who knows? Watch for yet another Middle East peace treaty that, like all the rest, won't last. And next Sunday, I'll go back to what I was going to do today, the first 11 verses of chapter 8, unless they're totally corrupted, which means I'll have to do something else. I don't know. Maybe the Lord's trying to tell me something. Maybe he wasn't happy with it.